The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, everybody, it's Dave here, Darren over there, and I'm on the wrong screen. Go to our normal startup screen, which is this one, and we don't see Darren. Hey, what a great way to start your Saturday. Anyways, we're here to talk Minnesota Vikings football, like we always do on Saturdays. Today, we have three themes. As usual, the first one starts off with, what is the latest update on the search for a defensive coordinator? We all know that Ed Donatell was released, polite way to put it, and that the Vikings are searching for a new person to replace him. They have interviewed four people so far. And we'll see how that goes. Followed up by what an absolutely wonderful season Justin Jefferson had. He's up for two awards. He's a finalist for the NFL MVP. Will he win that one? Doubtful. That's a quarterback award mainly. And he's also up for, he's one of the three finalists for the Offensive Player of the Year. I think he has a good chance at that one. Then finally, we're going to talk about rebuilding the defense a bit and what we might need to do that with. Darren thinks the most optimal way is to trade Danielle Hunter. I disagree, but we'll get into that right after this. Climb in the Pocket, Dave the Norseman and Lake Monster Brewing presents Two Old Bloggers. Starting now. Skol, everybody! Dave here, Darren right over there. How are things up in the Great White North, Darren?
We had a pretty mild, by our standards, January, but starting to get very cold again. That's okay. Otherwise, sunny day, talking football. Things could be worse.
Yes, they could. But luckily, they are not. So it's fun. It's a dark, dreary, rainy day here in Austin, but we need to rain. So that's a good thing. I will say hello to everyone that's in the remarks already. Raymond, Mary, Clifford, and Bob Swede. Welcome to the show, folks. Glad you're here. It's time to get it started. We titled the show, I can scroll down and hit the button, Offensive Player of the Year. We'll get into that in the theme two, right? And whether Justin Jefferson has his chance to win MVP, like two other people on that image, or just OPY. And what are those chances going to be? Everybody is saying hi in the remarks. That's good. Love building community, and we have a great one here. Now on to theme one. You wanted to start off with the defensive coordinator search. As we all know, this guy way over there got released over a week ago, and he's out doing whatever he's doing, and the Vikings front office, and in particular Kevin O'Connell, I'm sure Kwesi and folks from the front office are involved, are out looking for his replacement.
They are, and we know that four have interviewed for the job, and one of them we learned has been eliminated from that contention because Ryan Nielsen, you got the X over him there. He was the New Orleans Saints defensive coordinator last year, and he accepted the defensive coordinator job with the Atlanta Falcons. He was going to be the last guy I was going to talk about today, David, because I thought that when these four candidates were announced, when word got out that they had interviewed for the job, and they're the only four that we know of that have done so far, I think a lot of people were like, Mike Pettine, Sean Desai, okay, he interviewed for the job last year. Brian Flores, I think a lot of people, he's the biggest name and maybe the one that most people were excited about. Ryan Nielsen was a guy that I think everybody was kind of like, who's he? And as I looked into him a bit more, I was actually quite interested and a bit disappointed that he took the Falcons job because when you look at what he did in New Orleans, yes, he was only a defensive coordinator for 1 year last year, and that was co-defensive coordinator. Dennis Allen, the coach, was the other co-defensive coordinator. So there'll always be a bit of debate about how much of an impact Nielsen had on that defense. But that defense was, I believe, they were top 10 both in points given up and yards given up. I think ninth in points and sixth in yards given up. So a really good defense. And the New Orleans Saints had struggles on offense, as we know, which would have put the defense in a bit of a bind at times. Mm-hmm. So, I know they've got some pretty good players over there. Dennis Allen would have a big input in that defense and what was called and how they ran things. But that defense was a good defense, and he was co-defensive coordinator of that. He was the defensive line coach since 2017 in there, and he's been able to develop some pretty good players. Cameron Jordan's was a great, very good player, great player anyway. But he's had his best sack years with Nielsen as his coach. Nielsen developed Trey Hendrickson into a very good defensive lineman, and it allowed Hendrickson to get a nice contract with the Bengals, and now he's doing really well with the Bengals. Marcus Davenport's really developed well under Nielsen. They've had some other guys on the line, Aminata, Shai Tuttle, who ended up signing with Buffalo this year. So I think he's developed a lot of good players. He's developed a good defensive line. I would have been New Orleans has always had in the years that Allen has been there and while Nielsen has been there, they've had, I think, a very aggressive defense that goes – rallies to the ball, tackles well, things that we did not see from this year's Vikings defensive unit. People were saying, who's he? As I looked into him more, I was pretty interested in him. So a bit disappointed he's out of the running, but so be it. Of the other guys, I want to talk about Pettine a little bit. And Dave, you can chime in here as well, and as you always do, about your thoughts. But Mike Pettine, we know he's a guy on the defensive, on the Viking staff last year, assistant head coach, but he's got a defensive background, obviously, being a defensive coordinator at many stops, so he'd be the defensive guy. I guess the pros for him, when you look at his career, is that everywhere he's gone, he's been able to generate pressure for his defenses. If you look at his last 3 years as defensive coordinator with that team from Wisconsin, they had over 40 sacks every year. And Za'Darius Smith had his best years as a pro under Pettine. He was able to develop Preston Smith into a very good edge rusher after Smith hadn't really done a lot in Washington in his previous few years in the league. So he seems to be able to generate pressure, and that was one of the things the Vikings didn't do very well this year. But and his defense is it, particularly in Green Bay, you know, they were pretty good there. Their stats are good, but to me, he's kind of like yesterday's man, I think. His best defenses were really 2009, 2012 with the New York Jets when Rex Ryan was there. And when he was with Green Bay, the last 2 years of his defensive coordinator string, even though they had pretty good numbers overall as far as points given up and yards given up, in the playoffs when they got eliminated, the defense gave up over 30 points in both of those NFC Championship games. And really, the defense, and Pettine got blamed for the Packers not getting to the Super Bowl. And nobody in Green Bay, I think, was very amongst fans, if you read at the time, nobody was disappointed to see him go. And last year, he was with the Vikings staff. He would have had some input in that defensive game plan, how things were coached, advice, what to do. And we saw those results. Now, maybe Donatell didn't listen to him, but to me, Pettine is a guy who would not excite me. I don't think he would really bring the improvements that we need to see from the defense. Not a young, new mind with maybe new ideas. So I'm not really all that jazzed about him.
Well, it was in Green Bay, they got tired of him because he lacked making those adjustments, especially in second games when they played teams and also in second halves. And that is the same thing that Donatell did this last year. And so we don't know how closely he and Donatell worked, how it worked during game day, but it from our point of view, it reeks of a lot of that same stank. And with that, he's at the bottom of my list.
Mm-hmm. And mine as well. And I think from what I've read, just about every other Vikings fan beat writer who's got an opinion on it. So that's Pettine. Next guy I'll talk about a bit is Brian Flores. Surprisingly, he's never been a defensive coordinator in the NFL, even though he's been in the league since 2004, which is a long time considering he just turned 41. So he's been in the league a long time. He's had various roles on with defensive staffs, a lot of it with the New England Patriots, of course. So during his, you know, he's mostly known for being the head coach of the Dolphins for 3 years. And the defenses there were terrible his first year in 2019. They were very good in 2020, and they were kind of average when you look at the numbers in 2021. So his defenses were a bit of a mixed bag while he was head coach at Miami. So not a lot to take out of there. You can't look at his record there and say, well, every year the defense was out of sight. And so you feel good about him coming in. He also has got that. You know, the lawsuit that he has against the Giants running now, against the Broncos and the Dolphins. And that is something that people feel is, you know, they don't know how to feel about Flores putting that lawsuit. Is that going to be a distraction? Is he going to be, is he a cantankerous guy who causes problems with the teams he's involved with? If you're the Vikings, if you're Kevin O'Connell, you don't want any of that. He's like a straight talking, no nonsense guy as a coach. He's going to tell you what he thinks sometimes players like that. Sometimes people don't. But in Miami, a lot of people that when they looked at the team, looked at the talent while he was there, they felt that the team always played hard. They respected the job that Flores did. They thought they were well-disciplined teams. And they felt that Flores, from everything that I've seen and read, that he was a very strong, strong leader. So those are all good things. We also know he probably isn't going to run a lot of the two deep shell stuff. He's going to be more cover zero, cover one. He's going to be aggressive. Viking fans will like that. So he's a guy that interests me. I know he interests you a lot, Dave. I don't know if his kind of personality, if his coaching style, that gruff, no nonsense type thing, if that really fits with what Kevin O'Connell's more easy, less aggressive, a little bit reluctant to call players out and criticize them, whether Flores would jibe. But they've interviewed him, and we'll see about that. We also know that Flores is interviewed for the Arizona Cardinals head coaching job. And so he's got other options other than the Vikings, and those other options he may consider better than the Vikings. But he's a guy that right now, of the three that are left, he's the one that I'm interested the most in. I would like to see be the defensive coordinator for the Vikings if it can happen.
I agree with you there. I think the way he runs, he's, you know, his start under Belichick, He was never named DC under Belichick because Belichick doesn't do that. There's the overlap with Kevin O'Connell there. They know each other from New England. Then he moved on. He did improve the Dolphins' defense when he had the talent to do such. The Dolphins are their own head case sometimes, and they lost a lot of that in that third season. There is the lawsuit I worry about. Will it pop up its head at the most inopportune moment? Oh, you bet it will, especially if the NFL is trying to get back at him. Not that they would ever do that. We don't know. But like you said, he did interview for the DC job at the Cardinals as well as the head coach job at the Cardinals. And it depends on what the Cardinals are going to do. Do they feel the need that they've got to take him as head coach to tamp down? This could be a political thing from the NFL. Give him another head coaching gig so the lawsuits sort of go away? Or does he deserve it? Probably so. Or do they, say, no, he's never ever going to be a head coach again. He can apply for DC, and then he then takes, say, the Minnesota job, which I think he would be a good fit for. As far as personality, yes, he may be a little bit more gruff. But Ed Donatell, in a lot of ways, was more gruff and more stubborn. I don't know about gruff, but stubborn. And that may be a good offset, good cop, bad cop yes. type of situation. I do like that he was a head coach. That helps, bringing in the other, old head coaches to help the young head coach. All that sort of, that's an extra bonus if they bring him in. I think it would be good. And he did play an aggressive style defense in Miami, and that's what we're looking for, is aggressive. Doesn't necessarily have to be a 3-4, doesn't necessarily have to be a 4-3. And not that those matter a whole lot anymore, because generally they ran 20 to 25% out of base. But yep. Whether it's Fangio, a modified Fangio, a modified Belichick, whatever it is, we just want aggressive and effective. If we can get aggressive and effective, where guys are tackling, where they're getting pressure on a quarterback, and the defensive backfield's doing okay and holding its own, we will be much better off. I think Flores can deliver that, but we get into the next guy, Desai, he may be able to as well. I'm not going to give it to Patton, sorry. But my first choice is because of those extra intangibles of being the head coach, of seeing what he did when he first got to Miami, knowing that he coached under Belichick, who's a wizard when it comes to maximizing how his players played to their skills versus smashing a square peg in a round hole and being scheme independent, or scheme dependent. I think he does that, and I think that will be the best way to move this Vikings defense forward into the next few years.
Good points, Dave. We've talked about Nielsen, who's in Atlanta, Mike Pettine, and now Brian Flores. The last guy that's been interviewed is this guy, pitcher Sean Desai, associate head coach of the Seattle Seahawks this year. He was a defensive coordinator the previous year with the Chicago Bears, is something that I kind of forgot about until he got let go when the Nagy staff all got let go and Eberflus came in, interviewed for the Vikings defensive
coordinator. Three staffs on the Bears.
Yeah, he was there a while. So he knows, he was there when Fangio was there as defensive coordinator, when Donatell was there. He knows the 3-4 system that O'Connell, the Fangio system that O'Connell brought in last year when he became head coach. So he's very familiar with that. Last year, the Seattle's defense was not very good. They'd had a few good individual players. Now, he wasn't the defensive coordinator again, but the Seattle's defense was not very good. The offense was their strength, and the offense was a big reason why they made the playoffs, surprisingly. The year before, with the the Bears, they had some weird rankings. They were 22nd in points with him as defensive coordinator, so that's not very good. But they were sixth in yards that they gave up, which is really weird. Like, how could you be so low in yards given up and give up so many points? But the Bears' deep offense, and this is part of my theory of why that happened, the Bears' offense was terrible in 2021. They had Dalton as a quarterback. Then they went to Fields as a rookie. He really struggled, even more so than he struggled at times this year. They weren't, and so their defense was put in a lot of bad positions because of the offense. And I think that really impacted the points total. That's, you know, some of the, if you're looking at defensive coordinator and how Desai's defense did with him as defensive coordinator, the Chicago Bears in 2021 is the only year you really have. And I think that, but he's, again, he's another guy. He's highly educated, whether that makes any difference or not. He's got like a master's degree. He's considered an excellent communicator, communicates really well with his players. He's respected in that area. What I don't think maybe fans will like about him is that he's not, he might not, from what happened in Chicago, I was reading an article where, now this was only in November, so it wasn't the full year, but at that time, his defenses had only blitzed 16.2% of the time. So if you're looking for a coordinator and you're saying, we got to blitz more, Sean Desai does not appear to be the guy who likes to send blitzers. However, with Chicago as a defensive coordinator, he ran a lot of inventive stunts that I read that were very effective and helped. And as we know, Robert Quinn had a huge year in 2021, sacking almost 20 sacks that year. And Desai's stunts were really credited for helping Quinn and Khalil Mack at the time really maximizing their talents. And again, maximizing players' talents is something we did not see very much under Ed Donatell, and that's one of your problems. So that's good. One thing that I also you might see from Desai, if he's coordinator, is that he likes to use a lot of three safety looks. Hey, what did we hear about this year that was going to happen? We were going to see three safety looks, and we didn't really see it a lot. But that kind of makes sense too. With the way things are going, you talk about the 3-4, the base defenses. You're not in your base defenses very much. Usually you're in a 4 rushers, 2 linebacker, and then 5 defensive backs situation. Sometimes these, but what Desai likes to do is he only had one linebacker on the field. So he actually had the one linebacker, 4 rushers, and then he had kind of a, what, do we call it like a big nickel or like a hybrid safety linebacker? And then he had the 5 DBs as well. So he was really kind of running a 4-1-6 kind of defense. And with the amount of wide receivers that 4 wide receiver sets that teams run, tight ends getting, you know, swifter and a little more wide receivers themselves, I think that kind of defense is needed in the NFL a lot of times. And Desai knows how to run those. So he's an interesting candidate for me, but not my top choice. He'd be number 2 right now behind Flores, with Pettine being number 3, and let's hope he's not our next defensive coordinator. I think that of all of these guys, Kevin O'Connell's asked a bunch of questions of these guys in their interviews, but I think the thing that really I'd like to see, I'm sure O'Connell's asked, and what would be a big decider for me in all of this would be when O'Connell goes to these guys and say, okay, here are the defensive players I anticipate are going to be back next year, or who I'd like to be back. Sean, Mike, Brian, tell me what your plan is for each of these players to put them in positions to make plays that are going to make our defense better than it was in 2022. And their plan and what they say to that question would weigh quite heavily in my decision of who I was going to hire. Like, can they bring more out of the players we're going to have in 2023 than the previous staff, the previous defensive coordinator did? And how are you going to make Brian Asamoah a key player for us? How are you going to make Harrison Phillips? Lewis Cine. How are you going to make Harrison Phillips better than he was in 2022?
How are you going to develop the rookie corners, you know?
Yes.
The young corners. Mm-hmm. So no, it's great questions. Purple Haze brought up what about the Carolina coach? Somebody brought up Jack Del Rio at one point in time. We're working off the four that we know of. Yes, there are other possibilities out there, but the Vikings have not made it known that they've searched for those others. There's plenty of them that might make a good DC, but they haven't acted upon it. Now, do they still have some time? Yes. I wish they would speed it up a little bit. They may be waiting for somebody who's on the staff of these final four teams. I don't know. But there's a point where you want to get him in the house so that you can, as the Vikings prepare for the draft, for free agency and the draft, there's going to be input by the new defensive coordinator as to what type of players he's looking for to enact his vision within Kevin's vision of to make the team better. And the sooner we know that, the sooner that can be identified and the guys in the front office, either on the pro side or on the college side, can start identifying those people and start placing them on their lists as to where they are and what's the possibility of getting them or drafting them. And that is very, very important. So I hope it happens sooner or later. I hope we find out this week.
Yes, and for those that maybe are wondering, the canned Carolina head coach or interim head coach is Steve Wilks. And yes, Will Raggetts from Sports Illustrated in particular kind of said that he would be somebody potentially who would be on the Vikings radar. But we've heard nothing so far on social media or that he's been considered. Maybe it happens. Denard Wilson, who I believe is on the Bengals staff, he's another guy that had been mentioned as a possibility, but no word that he'd been considered or been approached for an interview at this point. But there's could be other possibilities, could be from the guys on the final four, like you mentioned. But I'm with you, Dave, in that let's get somebody in. Like, you don't want to – yeah, you want the best guy, but at some point you got to make a decision and you got to get a guy in, like you said, who identifies the players that he wants to keep, the guys he'd like to bring in next year, the guys he'd like to draft that would fit the defensive philosophy that he's going to run. So the sooner, the better, in my opinion.
100% agree, buddy. 100% agree. That brings us to the end of this segment. And that means we're talking about Lewis and his fantastic wood art. Remember, use the promo code CTPocket and get 20% off that piece. He wanted us to remind you all that not only does he do custom pieces, he does them in custom sizes. So whatever you would like, it could be, he just posted, I think today, a whole bunch of engagement and marriage ones where he takes engagement photos and marriage photos and he converts it into wood art. That's a custom piece. But not only can you do that custom piece, like the Thielen one he's got here, you could have it big, right? So if you want it big, he can do that as well. And he does great stuff. And I just wanted to let you all know, you can get it anything you want in any size. Now that brings us to theme two. We're going to be talking about Justin Jefferson and what a fabulous season he had this year.
We always talk a lot about Justin Jefferson. It's good to talk about him because it's usually good news good things happening. But as just about every Vikings fan would have heard this week, he's a finalist for the most valuable player in the NFL and also NFL Offensive Player of the Year. As you mentioned in your intro, he's got about zero chance of getting most valuable player MVP in the NFL. Cooper Kupp didn't get a sniff last year, and he had a better statistical year than Justin Jefferson. So not much chance that Jefferson wins that over guys like the Mahomes and in those cases. But he's got a very good shot at Offensive Player of the Year, which oftentimes does not go to the quarterback. And if he wins that, he will be the third Viking to have won NFL Offensive Player of the Year. The other two were All Day Adrian Peterson in 2012, and that year, many will remember, he also did win NFL MVP. And then way back in 1975, Fran Tarkenton was also NFL Offensive Player of the Year. So it'd be a great honor for Justin Jefferson to get that award. I think he's got a very good shot at it. And if he does get it, he'd be very deserving. And I think
he's competing with these two individuals. He's one of the three finalists. Mahomes and Hurts are the other guys.
So very, very stiff competition. But there is an argument to be made that that the Vikings, and it's a strong argument, and it's also, I think, a correct argument, that the Vikings don't finish 13-4, probably don't even make the playoffs without Justin Jefferson playing like he did in 2022. For the Eagles, well, you know, they had a much stronger roster, and I think that although Jalen Hurts had a hell of a year, we saw it in the second game of the year and in other games, but I think the way Gardner Minshew played in relief of him, you could say that they would have been fine with Minshew at quarterback with the rest of their roster in there as well. Mahomes is Mahomes. I think he's certainly deserving, but voters might say, well, that guy could win it every year, so we'll give it to somebody else, right? And if he wins the MVP, well, then it's even right. More of a reason for them to give somebody else the Offensive Player of the Year award. These are the things that we
preferably
think.
This guy.
Yes, preferably that guy. But I think that it's just a good opportunity. I wanted to look at it and say, and just kind of, I think let's marvel at the year that Justin Jefferson had, even if he doesn't win either of these awards. 128 catches, over 1,809 yards, best wide receiver season in NFL history, Vikings history, one of the best seasons in NFL history. 10 games where he had 100 yards or more receiving. So just a phenomenal, phenomenal year. Kirk Cousins, his quarterback, had talked about how, how Justin Jefferson has gotten better the 3 years that he's played with him, and he has. But that at some point, there's got to be a ceiling for Jefferson. Well, that's probably true, but let's hope that this year wasn't the ceiling. And even if it is, Dave, I will sign me up for that ceiling.
of 1,800 plus yards. Yeah. Oh, yes, per season. Now, he went 1,200 is – no, 1,400 his first year, 1,600 the next, and 1,800 this year. So if everything still progresses on that straight line trajectory, he may break the NFL record next year.
He might, yes. And really, he could have broke it this year. If he had a couple of those games where he was virtually shut out.
Shut down.
If he had like 80 or 90 yards receiving, which isn't really a lot for him, he would have been right up there breaking Calvin Johnson's record. Didn't happen, but anyway, still an awesome year. And when you look at Jefferson, the complete receiver, right? He might not be like track star fast, but he's plenty fast. You don't see a whole lot of people catching him from behind. And he gets by guys consistently. So he's still plenty fast. The route running, we know he can run every route that there is to run. He knows how to set up those routes. He's very savvy in his route running, very strong route runner. That's even more important than having great speed as a wide receiver, as we've seen from guys like Troy Williamson or Jalen Reagor. He's got great hands, can make the strong catches. Even though he's doesn't look like a very big guy, he's great after he breaks tackles. He's very great with getting extra yards after the catch, running after the catch. And he, for all intents and purposes, a great teammate as well. A guy who's not like a, even though he's one of the top receivers in the NFL, maybe the top, he doesn't seem to have acquired that diva gene yet that most wide receivers have. Mm-hmm. Yet. Those things are, and he's got the ability to make the tough catches, the contested catches. All these things the great receivers have. The high football IQ is another thing. So those things are all great. And he hasn't even, he just turned 24 on January the 16th, Dave. So that's like, if you look at it, just turned 24, he's going to get a massive payday this offseason, I believe. And even so, I think what he did this year, we can, I think, expect if he can stay healthy, and he's been very durable his three seasons, has played every game, regular season game, we can expect with the Vikings, if he stays with the Vikings, also not a given because we've seen so many great wide receivers get traded in recent years. You got Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, Amari Cooper, A.J. Brown, Tyreek Hill. All these guys have been traded from the teams that drafted them and moved on elsewhere. So hope Justin Jefferson, if he stays a Viking or wherever he is, I think you can expect that what he did this season, you can reasonably expect that that's the production you are going to get from him for the next 5-6 seasons at least. Now, and you know, so what kind of an offensive weapon and how much of a benefit that is to an offense to know virtually guaranteed that that's the kind of production you're going to get from this guy. That is awesome. Hopefully it's for the Vikings that we get to see that production. So just a great future ahead of Justin Jefferson. And I think the only thing, can he get any better? I don't know how much better he can get from 128 catches and 1,800 yards. But I think one thing I'd like to see from his game, and we saw it in the games he had some quiet games this year. In a couple of cases, it was because the game got out of hand and the Vikings, they didn't need him anymore and he got taken out of the game, like the Dallas game. But in other games where he struggled, he faced corners who were very physical, whether it was Jaire Alexander, Jeff Okuda, surprisingly, and then Sauce Gardner as well, and in another case, and then Darius Slay, where they were very physical, jammed him at the line of scrimmage. And I think Jefferson did not react that well to that. I think mentally he got frustrated, and that's something you do not want to see from a star wide receiver. So I think he's got to learn that teams, if they feel they've got cornerbacks who are capable of doing it, they're going to try this strategy of jamming him, of being physical, of frustrating him. So if I'm a cornerback and I see that I've got the wide receiver frustrated and he's out of it mentally, I already know that I've won the battle. So Justin Jefferson is going to have to learn to not show that kind of emotion, even if things aren't going very well for him, even if defensive backs are being physical with him. And the other side of it is, technique-wise, he's got to find counters to that physicalness. Like, is there a way to take a defensive back's aggressiveness and use it against them, whether it's using leverage in a way to cause them to get off balance and you scoot by them. I think he also needs to, and I'm sure he needs to get a little bit stronger so that he can kind of like shove off a DB who's trying to jam him. He's never going to be like DK Metcalf physical, but when defensive backs try to get physical with DK Metcalf, granted the guy's 6'4 and 240, but he just shoves him aside. and then your press coverage is done because you're on the ground. Mm-hmm. Justin Jefferson is probably never going to be able to be that physical, but even if he can get a little stronger and be able to, like, just with a subtle shove, get a defensive back off balance, then he's already won the route that way. So just a few things that I think that he needs to do in his game that could take him up just a bit of a notch and make it even harder to take him out of a ball game, which we saw happen, I think, too many times this year.
I agree with you. He's got to figure that out. It's going to be interesting. He's obviously a cornerstone of what Kevin O'Connell wants to do moving on forward. Hopefully he is. He's the best wide receiver in the NFL. So keep him happy. We'll eventually extend him, I'm sure, and keep getting him the ball. And then hopefully this offseason he can work on how do I go against those tough corners that want to play, harassing man type of situations. Maybe gets with Patrick Peterson and they work on it. It'd be a perfect one because he used to play in that style. he could teach him this is how you beat that. So we'll find out. That brings us to our favorite part of the show where we talk about Lake Monster Brewing.
Brewing beer.
One right now. I'm drinking a blackberry sour.
Mm.
This is their crowler sized. It's like drinking it's a blueberry sour, not blackberry, sorry. Oh, blackberry. And it's like tasting a blackberry pie, only in liquid form. It's a little tart, though, and it's nice and refreshing, keeps my mouth watering, which is good. What they have on tap right now is almost the same as last week, except, however, they have added a coconut stout. Folks, I have no idea what a coconut stout tastes like. It sounds to me, if you love stouts and you're in Minnesota and it's cold and you're dreaming of going to the islands on a vacation, this is an easier and cheaper way. Just go over to St. Paul, Minnesota to Lake Monsters, the brewery, the actual physical building, and try a coconut stout. Sounds interesting.
I'm not a big stout person, Dave, but I would try a coconut stout for sure.
Well, I love stout, but the whole idea of coconut to me is, well, that's different.
Yes, it is.
That brings us to theme three. You wanted to talk about the defense and how to make it better.
Well, one possibility, David. I think I'm going to get hammered on this one, but we'll see. Yes, we talked about it last week too. We'll probably talk about it many other times over the course of the off season. But Viking fans who watch the team this year, even if they didn't and just follow around, they know the defense has to get better. It was terrible in 2022. There's no other way of saying it. And somehow worse even than the year 2 years previous, which we didn't
below
think
were standard. That yeah. We expect as fans. Yes.
Yes. And well below the championship standard that Kwesi Dofamensa and Kevin O'Connell have been, they've been using that buzz phrase here the past couple of weeks. So we know it has to get better. We know that the Vikings defense to get better, it does have to get younger and faster. But the Vikings have some challenges, I think, in making that happen, in that A, there's the salary cap. And right now, this will change, but right now, it's not a great thing, but right now they're projected to be around, I think, $24 million over the cap if they kept everybody that they've got on the books right now. So they've got to get that sorted out. That cap situation, even if they resolve it to some degree, and they will, that's going to limit what they can do in free agency, which is one way to get potentially younger and better and faster on defense. The other thing that's limiting them is that right now we only have four for sure draft picks in April's draft, but we expect that there will be a fifth.
Well, there'll be a fifth, the compensatory pick. We were hoping for six. They said almost 100% guarantee we have a fifth. That'll be in the fifth.
Yeah, we don't know exactly, and it'll be late in the fifth. It'll be one of those extra ones.
Yeah, at the back end of it.
But that is well below the what we got used to with the Vikings under Rick Spielman, where we had 10, 11, 12, 20 draft picks, right?
Owning the seventh round, I know was no. His goal, but it doesn't build a championship team.
It does not. But the draft is you need as many bullets as you can muster most of the time. Going into this draft, this will be one of the first time in a while where we have not had a whole lot of bullets, and certainly not the full complement of seven bullets that we're used to. So that's a limiting factor. But so, of course, how do you get more draft picks? Well, people have been saying, well, we need to trade guys and acquire more draft capital. And that's true. But I guess the problem I'm seeing with the trade proposals and what people are throwing around for trades is that they're saying, yeah, well, we need to trade like some of the older guys. Like, we need to trade Dalvin Cook. We need to trade Harrison Smith. We need to trade Eric Kendricks. We need to trade this guy and that guy. And the problem with that is that I don't think there's going to be, you might want to trade them, but you need a market to trade. And I don't think that there's going to be a market for even somebody like Dalvin Cook because either of their contract situation, their age, or their performance on the field in 2022. And in some cases, for those guys, all three of those things are an issue. So you've got to look at, if you want to get extra draft picks and preferably premium draft picks, you have to give up a valuable asset. The Vikings aren't going to trade some of their core young guys. Like Justin Jefferson isn't going anywhere. Christian Darrisaw isn't going anywhere. Brian O'Neill is not going anywhere. Kirk Cousins is not going anywhere, even though he is. Most likely. I don't think he is. Most likely is not going anywhere in 2023.
He would have to agree to it.
So I feel that right now, like the best trade chip that the Vikings have of a guy who isn't one of your young foundational core players is Danielle Hunter. It seems like this will be every offseason for the past couple. It's been like, Danielle Hunter, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? We're not really seeing much of that right now, but I think that it has to be considered if the Vikings want to look at getting extra capital, getting younger, and getting some salary off the books, because Hunter is, let's look at it age-wise, he won't turn 29 until the end of October next season. So he's still, while he's not young, he's still in his prime. Salary cap wise, he would count next year just over $13 million against the cap, I believe. But after this season, where he had 11.5 sacks, if you include the playoff game, and well over 70 pressures, this is the last year of his contract. He's got two void years after 2023. I think he's going to be looking to get a pay raise and an extension after the year that he had. And so that's going to be costly for whoever does that to some degree. And maybe the Vikings don't want to go that way if they're trying to get younger on defense and get some more cheaper contracts. So this contract is an issue. And the other thing is that production-wise, after 2 years where he had a lot of injury issues, of course, didn't play in 2020, played only 6 games in 2021. Last year, he played all 17 games. He was hardly ever on the injury report. And he got, again, 11.5 sacks, 70 pressures.
He's and kept again, getting not, better as the season went on.
Better you as know, the season went on. Supposedly
making that transition from a 4-3 to a 3-4, and then how they used him at the end got to more hand in the dirt stuff. He's obviously valuable. He's an elite edge rusher in this league. What do you think, if they traded him, you could get for him?
Well, I think you can definitely get a first rounder for him. I think you can maybe get a late round pick, 5th, 6th, to go along with that as well. Keeping in mind that the team that gets him, they know that they're going to have to sign him to an extension, and it's going to be more expensive than the contract he's currently on. So the opposing team is going to look at that as part of the bargaining thing too. Yeah, we get him, but we got to pay him too, right? So I think that potentially limits his that's going to be in the equation. But
on your side, where that comes in, we're going to start to get in some of his numbers. His base salary this year is $4.9 million. That's cheap.
It is.
That's going to be highly attractive to somebody. Plus $500,000 a game bonuses. So even there, it's cheap. It goes up to $13 million, I believe it is. That's cheap for a defensive end of his quality. That's dirt cheap. They're going to want to take that and then negotiate. That would just be for 1 year. If he played all 17 games and with his base, he's going to cost the team $13.1 million, whoever gains him. So 13 plus $1 million plus first-round draft choice plus whatever other draft choices are going to be your costs to acquire him if you're the acquiring team. What does it cost the Vikings if they let him go? Do you know those numbers?
I do not know these numbers, Dave.
Because he is has two more years on his contract that were voided, right? 24 and 25 were on his contract. They were voided. And all that bonus was moved up. The Vikings, if they let him go, would still owe, it's a little over $7 million this year and $11.24 million the following year. But before the show, I wanted to get with one of my cap experts. I believe that $11.24 million, mm-hmm. because if they trade him, I think that gets accelerated into 2023. Add that to that $7 million. And you're looking at over $18 million he'll cost the Vikings in 2023 on their books, plus whatever draft choices you get to replace him. So if you get a first rounder, that'll cost $1 million plus, a sixth rounder on top of that, you know, just under $1 million, blah, 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 blah. So it's going to probably cost you about $20 million just to trade him. If my knowledge of the cap is correct, because I believe that 11.24 gets accelerated. I don't believe it hangs out there. I believe that gets accelerated. So if that gets accelerated, that's where you're at. It's going to cost you around $18 million just to get rid of them. And you're only saving $4.9 that you're not paying him. So there's a significant difference there. Are you going to make that up with who you get, especially over the long term, if you start counting, well, I get this draft choice and this draft choice, are they going to overcome his skill level? And that's where I think the answer is no, they're not. I think going into this season, there's going to be contract renegotiations with his camp because he's not going to play for the $4.9 million base.
No.
Yes, his agent screwed him over during that time period, the initial one. He's since got a new one. He's not going to play for that. The Vikings are going to have to do an extension. And then with the extension, they can keep that cap hit low this year, low next year, and, you know, push the money down the road. But I don't think you are going to get that. Now, Clifford just suggested we could do the extension and then trade him. That's possible. Bob Sweet, trade him for Lance. Don't know if the Niners would be up for that, but that is a possibility as well since the Trey Lance rumors started this week as well. Don't know. It's going to be an interesting decision, but I do believe out of all those guys, most people that talk about trading, Dalvin Cook and Danielle Hunter are the only ones under 30, unless you touch the tackles. They'd be foolish to do that. Especially Darisaw. Everybody else is over 30, whether it be Hicks, whether it be Kendricks, whether it be Hitman, whether it be who else could they trade? Even Kirk Cousins, for that matter. You're all looking at over 30 guys, and most of them don't have value. Yep. It's you're not going to get a whole lot, if anything, back. People say, oh, Dalvin Cook's worth at least a second. And I'm like, is he at his cost? Really? You can get
the answer to that one is no.
No, not in his league. You know, as I do my prep, one of the things I look at is salary ranges for the top five and top 10 in each position. And every position has gone up every year. That's normal. You know, who makes the most and, you know, where everything fits in. Somebody always blows out that top end. Except for running backs this year, they dropped by well over $5 million on that top end. And they are continuing to drop. And it's because teams don't value them that much.
Yeah.
It's too easy to find multi-headed monsters that you can go with that are cheap and expensive. It's how football is evolving. It's not like it was 10 years ago. It's not like it was with Adrian Peterson, where you needed a bell cow back taking, you know, 400 snaps a season. So it's, I don't know. For me, Danielle Hunter's a hard one to put up for, you know, to trade. Now, if some team gets stupid and offers you a bazillion picks, oh, by all means, take advantage of that. But This one's going to be hard because I think it would be more expensive to trade him than it would be to just to extend him. But Clifford's right. Do the extension beforehand, and then he becomes a better trade target. But if they're going to do that, they got to get started right now.
That's it, because that's going to take time. But very excellent point about the financial side of the things, Dave. I think one thing I didn't get to mention was, and well, we got time, but like even though we always talk about how athletic prime, you don't want to keep players at 30 or so if they're getting to 30. But there are examples this year and last year where I think this helps Hunter's market in that, again, only turning 29 at the end of October of next year. Mm-hmm. This year, Matthew Judon was 30 years old. He got 16 sacks. Cam Hayward, different position. He's a nose tackle. He's 33. He got 11 and a half sacks. J.J. Watt, different position again. He's a defensive lineman. 33, he got 12 and a half sacks. Brandon Graham, he's 33. He does play that position that Danielle Hunter's playing right now. He's 33. He got 11 sacks with the Eagles. So there you can get, unlike running back, where they drop off a cliff once they hit 27, 28, like a guy like Danielle Hunter, who, by the way, has had very little mileage on his tires in 2021 and 2020, even though he's injured. Like there is precedent for guys who are over 30 being extremely productive as edge rushers in the NFL. So if you're a team,
Von Miller had eight
sacks this year at age 32 when he only played half a season. So teams they can look at Danielle Hunter if they're interested and say, they can look at him and say, yeah, sure, he'd be 29 in 2023, but I think he's a 10 plus sack guy. He could be like that for three or four years with us. So it makes sense for us to make that trade. We're not going to get a player who's going to play, have one good year, and then he's going to be terrible. So I think that helps his trade value. And it's one reason why the Vikings might consider trading him, because sure, there's two ways of looking at it, right? Like you always want to, if you can, like the Bill Belichick philosophy of how, get rid of a player 1 year early as opposed to 1 year late. So the Vikings can look at it, hey, our defense wasn't very good with Danielle Hunter. It was terrible, actually. We need to get younger. We need draft capital. He's our best asset. Let's trade him. And maybe we win the gamble and he falls off a cliff at 30 and we got rid of him at the right time. So it's a balancing act, but there is also that risk that right now, the Vikings do not have anybody on the roster who could come in and be the player that Danielle Hunter is right now. DJ Wonnum isn't going to do it. Patrick Jones III is not going to do it. Maybe they get more playing time and they are more productive, but I don't see them being a Danielle Hunter. But at some point, you're going to reach the decision of you got to get rid of an aging Danielle Hunter anyway. And now is his trade value, I think, is only going to go down as we get into 2023 and 2024. So now with your defense needing to get younger, you need more cap space. Although as you went over the financials, we might not really save all that much. Mm-hmm. I think Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, this is something he has to consider. I've got this asset. How much can I get for him? Say if he gets a number one or maybe something even higher after that, that gives him the extra draft capital in April. Say you got two number ones. Now you've got lots of flexibility and you can maybe use one of those to get a second round pick that you don't have right now, or maybe even two of those, or who knows how it all goes. It can allow you to accumulate more picks in the mid to later rounds if you want that.
And whoever, say he's got a trade partner, that GM knows the situation on the money, knows yes. where Kwesi sits, and still loves him, knows that he's going to have to get over that hump that Kwesi has to get him to release. And it's going to take a lot. Whether he gets it or not, going to be interesting. Because he's one of those. You know, if you go into a butcher shop and you're looking at prime rib, right, and you got a cheap sirloin or a flank steak or a butt steak or something like that, your prime rib, the nice expensive cuts of beef, those fillets, everything else, you're looking at Daniil's one of those on our team. He's one of those stars, and you're going to have to pay a premium to get him because Kwesi will have so much to overcome, whether it be money, but also in replacement of adequate replacements and then building up, getting younger, getting faster, getting more aggressive, etc. He's going to have to do it. All the more reason, let's double back to the defensive coordinator. How is that guy going to use Daniil?
That's right. If he can convince Kwesi and Kevin O'Connell that he's got a better plan to use Daniil Hunter in a way where he's more effective than he was last year, although it's not to say he wasn't effective. Right. I think he was certainly very effective, very quiet in the first half of the season, Dave. Came on in the second half, and whether it was because he got more comfortable playing in the new role as an edge outside linebacker as opposed to being a defensive lineman with his hand in the ground his whole career, we don't know. But still, even as he got more effective during the season, in the second half of the season, I think there were still lots of times, even in that Giants playoff game, where like, where's Daniil Hunter? Like, where's the pressure coming from? It wasn't coming from anybody, not just Daniil Hunter. The whole front seven had a part in that. But yeah, like it's a question that needs to be asked. I think it is being asked because both Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell talked about how we got to consider everything in the offseason. We look at everything, and you do. Other than Justin Jefferson and Christian Darrisaw, probably you cannot say that nobody is on the table to be moved around or exchanged. If you get the right offer, and yep. Daniil Hunter, I think we've come to the point in time, if we didn't in previous years, where that time has arrived. Particularly after he's had a year where he's shown, "Hey, I'm healthy, I'm productive,
and not only can I play in the 4-3, I could play in the 3-4 now."
That's right.
Yep. Now I agree. It's going to be interesting. Just because the season is over for the Vikings doesn't mean the Vikings news is going to get dull, and it sure hasn't yet. And we're going to keep that way all the way through the draft and everything in between, from the new DC hiring, free agency on just over the horizon, and it's going to be fun. So. We're going to be here with everybody talking about it.
That comment about that was, I can't remember who it made. Maybe it was Clifford who was talking about how trade Lance for Hunter. That would be a wild trade because I don't know if the 49ers would they don't really need Hunter. They're already the best defense in the NFL without him. They got to pay Bosa. So and he's going to be very costly. So, but anyway, it's fun to talk about these things for sure. Mm-hmm. As you say, not dull when we get into speculation and who's going to stay and who's going to go and who do we need to bring in and who do we need to get rid of. It's fun.
All we know is that we've got to get better. We don't want a huge backslide coming in 2024. So, we know the Wolves don't.
No.
With that,
which may play into how the
which may play into
roster construction goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With that, any last words there, buddy?
Last words are, we were talking offline how I was saying last week how, man, I've kind of lost the yen for watching football because the Vikings went out. And last week I only watched, I think, one of the four games or something like that. And I was kind of bummed, but man, tomorrow's two NFC championship games are humdingers. I am not missing those. This, particularly that Philly 49ers game. Yep,
looking forward to that.
Very intrigued to see how all that all goes because, even though the Eagles were much more dominant in their wins, you can look at their schedule and say, okay, exactly who have they beaten this year? That's really, really, really good.
Well,
the 49ers are the best team that they have faced. And I want to see how that defense of the 49ers, how they can stop that Philly, particularly that running game.
Mm-hmm. And they may be looking to hit Hurts' shoulder.
Yes.
Head shoulder. It's going to be interesting. And because I dislike Philly and their fans, I'm going to be pulling for the 49ers and our buddy Niner Beto from Niner Sickness. I'm going to be rooting for them. And then in the other game, even if Mahomes plays with a high ankle sprain, that's amazing. But I think Joe Cool is going to rule the day on that one, and I'm sort of pulling for the Bengals.
Well, hey, that's going to be another like Lou Anarumo. What has he, after his defense did such a fantastic job in Buffalo on last week? Like, I was, you know, I just had to give it up to him because most football fans couldn't name three players on the Bengals defense, but they were locked down and all over a Buffalo offense that's supposed to be really good, and so now you got Mahomes. They stopped them before. Can they do it again? And it's going to be like, again, that's another phenomenal game that's going to be extremely fun to watch. And it's the four best teams in the NFL are playing. So you can't ask for better matchups.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's going to be fun. With that, what do we say?
We say Skol Vikings, even
though Skol Vikings. Thanks for watching, everyone. Thanks for watching. Like, subscribe, and ring the bell, and rate us on your favorite aggregator. And a special shout-out goes to our partners, The Daily Norseman, where the best Vikings content can be found, and to Lake Monster Brewing, home of the best beer in Minnesota. Skol, everybody.